The opinions expressed by the host and guests on Where Did the Road Go are their own and do not represent those of WVBR or its management. Our aim is to explore the fringe, lost civilizations, alternative science, the paranormal, and much more. Join us on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com, where you can send us questions for our live or future guests via email or the live chat room. And remember to subscribe to us on iTunes. And now welcome to this week's edition of Where Did the Road Go?
And I am your host, Soraya, as always. And tonight we had a little bit of a change up in guests. We'll be rescheduling our originally featured guests sometime in the future. But tonight we're going to be talking with Marty Leeds. And are you with us, Marty?
I am.
All right. And I thank you for coming on with us in such short notice.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And I have to thank Cameron from Sacred Geometry International for actually introducing us.
Yeah, Cameron's a good dude. Yeah, I love SGI. I love Randall Carlson's work, and yeah, I've become friends with Cameron online, so yeah, good guy.
Yeah, absolutely, and he has yet to feed me a bad guest.
Oh.
So, all right, so you want to tell people a little bit about your history and what you're interested in here?
Yeah, sure. My name is Marty Leeds. I've got a few books, The Pie in the English Alphabet, Volume 1, Volume 2, and I'm working on Volume 3 right now, which I'm hoping to have out by the end of the year. Probably not. That will probably be next. But then I have another book called The Peacock's Tales, The Alchemical Writings of Claudia Pabonis. They're all available on Amazon.com or my site, MartyLeeds33.com. And yeah, basically what my focus is what I've uncovered is a mathematical structure for the English alphabet. It's called Kabbalah or Gematria, things like that. And it's encodes the transcendental number of pi, 3.142. So it's all based around pi. And so that's kind of the focus of my work. I deal in like comparative mythology, philosophy, symbolism, sacred geometry. And the cipher that I uncovered is actually based on religious symbolism and like secret society symbols. Things like the Jewish menorah and the Freemasonic square and compasses and the Tetragrammaton and whatnot. So that's kind of my work in a nutshell. Like I said, I got a few books, and then I also do a lecture series online on YouTube. You can get, I have like 40 or 50 videos that I cover a bunch of different subjects. Everything from the Zodiac and the 12 Disciples of Christ and chess and dice. And I'm about to do one on billiards and how you can use this number-to-letter correlation for the English alphabet on billiards. So a bunch of things you check out for absolutely free.
All right, that's really awesome. I watched a bunch of them. They were very interesting. Now, I'm familiar with Gematria from more of the Hebrew side and like what Crowley was able to do with it and stuff, where the letters correspond to different numbers and those numbers then have their own meanings. But I was never aware that English had this correspondence, because it seemed like English was sort of a thrown together language in a sense, like it comes from all different languages.
Yes. That's when, you know, in investigating this stuff, I didn't know if there was one either. And then I kind of came up with this one, based off, you know, basically, like I said, religious symbols and stuff like that. And very kind of clearly showing that whenever the modern English alphabet was constructed or crafted or channeled or, you know, whatever decided upon, that they did it with this numeric structure. So that's, and then we basically know that modern English was created around the 1600s, a little bit before that. And I think it's based off, well, Latin, of course, Middle English, elements of Hebrew and things like that. So.
Okay. All right. And what about newer words that have, you know, evolved, like slang words and stuff that have evolved into our language? Do those fit this pi correlation as well?
It's hard to say, you know. I mean, obviously people create words without having any idea of the cipher involved. I do know that when, you know, when this cipher was created, this was basically the time of the translation from the King James Holy Bible, the authorized version, that was done in 1611. And then right around that time, we also had William Shakespeare. So, and it's pretty much well known that William Shakespeare gave us over 20,000 of our English words. And of course, a lot of our words actually come from, words and phrases actually come from the Bible as well. So this kind of, this point in our history, you know, 1500s, 1600s around then, this is also the time when Freemasonry was established, by the way.
Right.
This point in our history, they were creating a lot of these new words that we use today. So, so that's kind of some of the history behind it. But yeah, as far as, what, you know, people now that create words? I don't know. You know, I think that there are secret societies that absolutely know this information, the quote-unquote elite, if you will, that know this information and are keeping it from the general public.
Okay. Well, why? I guess would be the big question.
The most succinct answer I can give to that, why, is because what this helps you do is, at least for me and a lot of the people that have watched the videos, helps you validate, especially with the Holy Bible, helps you clarify and validate what it is you're actually reading. That this book is a symbolic book. It's a book that's encoding mathematics and very specific mathematics. And we could go into, you know, Jesus Christ. I did a video on Moses. I did it on the 12 disciples. You know, I write about all this stuff. And that basically when they were crafting the original, into the modern English, authorized King James Version from that original Greek text, when they were translating it, they did it mathematically. And so this is what they are keeping. So now if you can hide this true information that really validates what you're reading in the Holy Bible, and then you can use this text for, mass manipulation, mind control. You can use it for, you know, what it's being used for right now, you know, perverting our history, turning mythology into history, that sort of thing. So, basically what this has done for me, understanding this information, clarifies and without question that there is a intelligent force that is at work within, you know, the human experience within this universe. And that one of the ways to understand this force is through symbolism and mathematics. Okay. If that makes sense.
It does. It's just, it seems like it's something that's not necessarily hard to prove if you can find the math. It just seems like it was a lot of work to put together in the first place.
Yes. I think it was. I mean, the people that were, you know, some of the people that were around during this time were just some of the most ingenious people that have really ever lived in one respect, you know, during, you know, basically 1500s, 1600s, middle 1600s, something like that. You had guys like Copernicus, Kepler, Galileo, Giordano Bruno, Francis Bacon, Rene Descartes, artists like Michelangelo, Raphael, John Dee, Edward Kelly, some great alchemists like Anastasius Kircher, Daniel Milius, like all of these chaps were living at this time that when this, you know, when our English alphabet was constructed. And so it really shows that there was some sort of, you know, you could say renaissance or rebirth or, you know, this kind of this renaissance of mind going on at the time. And so, yeah, it's very, I mean, the cipher, as far as I know, can basically be used on anything. And that's what I'm basically taking the thing on a world tour, if you will, and looking at all the ways that we can, you know, view this thing. And that goes into everything from board games to biblical verses to names, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
So. Do you want to explain the cipher a little to people?
Yeah, sure. I can just kind of give you a quick rundown of it. Basically, what I did is I split there's 26 letters of the modern English alphabet. And of course, what I did is I split those letters into blocks of 13 and 13. So A through M and N through Z. And then the first time I constructed this, basically what I did is I walked up the 6 days of creation as the motif that we see in the Bible, 6 days of creation, then resting on the seventh. So I basically just went A, B, C, D, E, F, G, being 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And then I rested there once, like I said, because of the motif in the Bible, but then also because of the Freemasonic square and compasses. There's that G in the center of that square and compass. And so from there, then I just walked back down. I literally just kind of made a mirror or symmetry. So I went H-I-J-K-L-M, being 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. So all I did then was to create a balance in the alphabet. I took those numbers and I threw them onto the other side of the alphabet. So N-O-P-Q-R-S-T is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And then UBWXYZ is 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And so this establishes the numbers to letter, the numbers to the letters. And then what I did is I ended up taking out the non-prime numbers. So a prime number is a number divisible by one itself, of course. And the non-primes were 1, 4, 6 and 6, 4, 1. Well, one plus, and this is on both sides of the alphabet. Well, 1 plus 4 plus 6 plus 6 plus 4 plus 1 equals 22. And what you can do is take that 22 and divide it by the central 7, or the G and T on both sides of the alphabet. And 22 divided by 7 is an approximation of pi begotten by whole numbers. So it's 3.142, widely used approximation of pi by, you know, architects and engineers and that sort of thing. And pi must be approximated just because it is an infinite number. So at some point you have to approximate this number when you're in mathematics, of course, and widely used approximation 3.142. So, and then you can actually connect these numbers with the symbol of the Jewish menorah. which is what's so interesting. So the 146641 is the branches of the menorah, and then the central pillar actually leads to that 7. And so, like I said, 22 divided by 7 is pi, and you have pi on both sides of your of the alphabet then. And when you bring these two pis together symbolically, it's pi 7, pi 7. Well, this is one of the symbolic representations of, the, of what's known as the Tetragrammaton, which is a symbol widely used in alchemy and by Gnostic Christianity and Kabbalists and all of this. And so one of the symbolic representations is pi 7, pi 7. And so it makes sense that Tetragrammaton, gramma means message, but it's also where we get the word grammar. And so it actually shows that this quote-unquote Yahweh or Jehovah character that they're talking about, the Tetragrammaton, is actually found within our language.
Okay. All right. Now, some people might argue that you could manipulate stuff and math and numbers enough to prove pretty much any theory if you really wanted to. Do you think that's true?
No, I don't think that's true. That's some of the criticism because, you know, it's kind of like, in the trivium, they call it Texas sharpshooting, where you just kind of like, you know, force fit the things to make your case or whatever. And I don't necessarily think you can even do that, especially when you're talking about the exactitude and precision of mathematics. Like, for instance, maybe we can go into this in a little bit or something, but, you know, when I decoded Jesus Christ, the name of Jesus Christ. Now, mythologically, this is a sun god. And so what happens is when you decode this mathematics, and this is basically just using addition and multiplication, you get precise numbers directly attributed to the sun. I mean, exact, you know. So you're talking about numbers in time, space, and metrology. Metrological numbers dealing with, like, the radius of the sun, the diameter of the sun. And so when you get numbers like that and you realize that mythologically you're talking about the sun, it's no longer a force fit. It's very, like I said, it's very exact. And so, and things with, like, chess is the same thing, where there you can actually get two lunar, a solar, and a precessional calendar embedded in the game of chess. And these are, once again, like exact numbers. You know, you're getting the 365.25 day of the solar year. You're getting the 25,920 year period of the precession, the equinoxes, et cetera, et cetera. And so it's not like you're getting a number, hey, we're getting 27,000 here, but we're just going to make it be 25,920. No, you're getting the exact number. And so that's where it kind of, it goes beyond, you know, like a force fit, I guess you could say.
Okay. All right. Now, what was it? Hamlet's Mill was another book that kind of showed the prevalence of processional numbers in ancient myths and stuff. But this goes further than that. I mean, you're talking about a very sophisticated mathematical knowledge of the universe embedded into this system.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, numbers of time, space, geodetic numbers or metrological numbers, and numbers of the precession of the equinoxes are absolutely embedded in our language. Let me give you an example. There's a thing called, this is what the Freemasonic Square and Compass is actually talking about. It's an ancient mathematical mystical art called squaring the circle. And this is what the Great Pyramid of Giza does. Well, when you square the circle of the earth, what happens is basically you can draw a square around the earth, and then you can make a circle whose circumference equals the perimeter of that square. And what happens is you could draw the moon down and therefore establish the combined radii of both the Earth and the Moon, right? This is what this mathematical art does. This is what the Great Pyramid of Giza is encoding, squaring the circle. Well, this number is 5,040 miles. And the mile is actually encoded within the Great Pyramid of Giza's measurements as well. So we have this number 5,040. Well, if you multiply the numbers of multiply, so multiply is M is 1, U is 6, L is 2, T is 7, I is 5, P is 3, L is 2, and Y is 2. If you multiply these numbers, you get 5,040. And so you get this exact, you know, and then you can even go to the Bible where it says, go forth and multiply, and you realize that what mystically they're talking about is this architecture of our cosmos that you can understand very simply through geometry and simple numbers. So.
Okay. All right.
And that's just one example. That's out of numerous words where you can get these very, very specific numbers.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about chess, because that sounded very interesting. What did you find encoded into a chessboard?
Well, there's a ton of stuff just like numerically and like esoterically and symbolically within the chessboard that we could go into. But what I found was there's calendars embedded in chess. And this is what the ones I've found so far are two lunar, a solar, and a processional calendar embedded in the game of chess. And this is the exact numbers, like I was saying. And so it's the idea is we're putting numbers to letters of the characters of chess. And the board is even set up in a very particular way with very particular spellings. One of the things I like to point out is that one of the things that it's encoding is a lunar calendar. And if you notice, the word night is spelled with a K, though there's no reason phonetically to have the K there. Now, in order for the calendars to work in the game, the K must have been there. It had to be there, because otherwise night, not spelled with a K, would just be spelled with a, you know, would equal 26. With the K, it equals 29. Therefore, you can create, a synodic lunar month is actually 29.5 days. And so the night in and of itself is encoding this time period of 29 days. And then it allows you to create the rest of the calendars. So in order for this to have worked, not one number could have been off. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Now, if night was spelled equal 30 as opposed to 29, the whole thing would have fallen. It wouldn't have worked. And so this shows really that whoever crafted this, whoever translated it into English from Sanskrit or Latin or Greek or whatever, that they did this with the mathematics in mind, and that they absolutely knew about things like the precession of the equinoxes. They understood, you know, the heliocentric system. They understood, you know, et cetera, ad infinitum. You know, they understood the path of the sun, the number of days in the solar year, a declination and ascension of stars, all of these things, and that they actually encoded this stuff within games.
Well, now, the word knight, though, did that start on a chessboard, or did that come elsewhere and then just be used on a chessboard?
That's a good question. I don't know. I don't know the root of that. But I do know that, you know, like I said, that knight in and of itself with the K, you don't even need it there. There's no reason for it, you know? And when you actually get into this, you start to see that how some of these words were formed and why the spellings. Like, when you look at a name like Feudie or Pfister, or Pfizer, or Pfeiffer, right? Mm-hmm. All of those are spelled with a P. Why? There's no reason for it. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And it really, and when people look at the English language, they look at that and they say, God, English language is kind of, you know, screwed up. I mean, why are we putting a P? Well, when you do the numerical equivalence to every single one of those first three letters, it's 365. And of course, we're dealing with the 365 days of the solar year. Of course, we're talking about that is the bringer of our light, if you will, the sun. And so and you start to look at this mathematically, and it's like, okay, well, that makes sense why they have the P there now. That's just another example.
Okay. What about other board games that you found this type of stuff in?
Well, I haven't looked. I want to look into backgammon, but I don't really want to talk about it right here. I started looking into it, and I want to do a video on it, but I don't want to talk about it here. But that's another one that I've started to look into. I'm doing one on billiards. Hopefully, I'm going to do the video tomorrow. And that is super interesting as well. But one of the ones we can talk about here is dice. Now, dice is very easy. I even got a set in front of me right here. The die is, of course, just a hexahedron. It's just a cube. And it's the numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, right? Well, whenever you roll a die, right, let's say if you roll a 6, the opposite's going to be 1. You roll a 4, its opposite's going to be a 3. You roll a 5, its opposite's going to be a 2. Which means that any time that you roll a die, it automatically rests on 7, if you will. So the same motif that we have in the Holy Bible, 6 days of God doing work, resting on the 7th, you find this exact thing in die. Putting the numbers to the letters of dice, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So I'm just going to do this quick. 1 is O-N-E is 2, 1, 5. This equals 8. 2 is T-W-O is 7, 4, 2. It equals 13. 3 is 28. 4 is 19. 5 is 21. And 6 is 14. So if you add up one die, it equals 103. So accounting for both pair of dice, the pair of dice, it equals 206. And there are 206 bones in the human body. And so the number of bones in the human body is directly encoded within die. And that's, like I said, that's the exact number. Now, what's even more interesting than that is it's called roll your bones. That's one of the terms that is associated with die. And not only that, is that the original set of die that they found were actually made out of animal bone. And so you can see that, you know, and that's, once again, I mean, I just explained the cipher. You can go on the site and double check all this yourself, and please double check the math, but it gives you the exact number. And then you say, well, what's the chances of that? You know, what are the chances of that even happening?
Right, but I guess the counter argument would be, couldn't you find something that 206 would line up with at some point if you looked hard enough?
Well, we're talking about the human body, though. You know what I mean?
All right.
We're talking about a very, I mean, if it came out to 205 and I want, you know, or 200 and, you know, whatever, you know, or 394 or something, and I wanted to force fit in something, well, I couldn't say, you know, hey, well, we're just going to subtract this many and then it's going to equal the number of bones in the human body. No, we're talking about the exact number.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
All right. Yep.
And then you also have the esoteric and symbolic side of this that look at the cube. Look how important the cube has been in esoterica, occult. I mean, look at the Kaaba, right? You have the Kaaba. This is one of the ways. The Kabbalah is, of course, cable or Kaaba, which means cube. So in Mecca, you have these people literally circumambulating around a cube, you know? And so you see that this very important geometric form, one of the Platonic solids, encoded in a game is encoding dice. And then it says roll your bones, and then they're made out of bones. Really, what you're saying is that's a lot of evidence to say that there's no way that that's just a coincidence. You know what I mean?
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
One more thing about die, if I may.
Yeah, go ahead.
There's six sides of the die. What this is encoding is, what, like I said, it's six sides, and then it rests on the seven, right? So six and one, five and two, three and four, right? Well, this is the exact mathematics of the human being. This is the three-dimensional XYZ coordinates of you. It's up and down, left and right, four and reverse, and then there's a central axis point, and the axis point is the point of the consciousness of the human being. That's you. And so we can see the 6 days of creation when we look at it esoterically and symbolically, when we look at a die, both of these things are referring to the three-dimensional mathematics of the human being.
Okay. All right. And I just forgot what I was going to ask you.
Let me say one more thing about the die here,
okay,
too. It's really just kind of, you know, kind of hit this home here. There's six sides of the die, and of course it's a square, so it's 360 degrees. Well, six times 360, accounting for the entire geometry of the die, is 2,160. Well, the diameter of the moon, found in that, once again, that squaring the circle where we can find the radii, the diameter of the moon is 2,160 miles. So the diameter of the moon in miles is encoded in dice as well. And that's, once again, that's the exact number. That's like 99.8% correct or something.
So. All right. Well, what I was trying to remember was, when you're looking at all this information, like you're talking about the moon here, this implies very high scientific knowledge that had to be achieved first before the stuff could even be encoded into any language.
Yes, and you know what? I think the thing that we're starting to come to realize as a humanity now is that our ancient ancestors were much more intelligent than we often give them credit for. A lot of people have a very Darwinian view of our own intelligence, you know, that things were basically, you know, these were savages, these were primitives of the past, and now it's this straight evolutionary line to, you know, this intelligent species that we are with all of our modern technology and whatnot. And I think that that's completely wrong. I think that viewpoint and how we view our history is completely incorrect. And there's proof, and there's many, many researchers out there that are doing fantastic work proving this to be so. What was the book you just mentioned?
Amulet's Mill?
Yeah, where they, you know, they're kind of bringing out archaeoastronomy and showing that the people that created some of these Gothic cathedrals, some of these pyramids all over, they absolutely knew about engineering, mathematics, science, you know, astronomy, and they linked all these things together. They were very, you know, this is very sophisticated knowledge for quote-unquote primitive people. Now, they left this information they left it for us in stone. You know, we know that because, I mean, we can go and look at, you know, the Mayan Chichen Itza. This is encoding the solstices and equinoxes and et cetera, et cetera. Well, I'm going one step further and saying, not only did they encode some of this stuff in the pyramids and cathedrals and things like that, but they also encoded it within our language.
All right. Tell us a little bit about the phrase squaring the circle and where that came from and what it means.
Squaring the circle?
Yeah.
Yeah, basically, in sacred geometry, you have, this is a very consistent theme, that heaven is a circle and earth is a square. And this is in alchemical literature, this is in Freemasonic literature, this is the Taoists have this. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. This is what they're saying, heaven is a circle, earth is a square. And what the idea is, mystically anyway, is that, this really kind of relates to pi in one respect, because you can't ever really find the area of a circle because pi is this infinite transcendental number. There's 10 billion or 10 trillion digits of pi that have been calculated thus far. And so we can never truly find the area of a circle. And so it's really kind of this mystical thing that says, you know, it's really drawing you towards geometry. Now, why squaring the circle is important is because using simple geometry, a circle and a square, basically, a compass and a square, you know, of course, Jesus was a Jewish carpenter, and what did the carpenters of old use but compasses and squares? Using just very simple geometry, you can understand the architecture of our creation. You can understand how things, how bodies like the moon and the earth were, quote unquote, built, you know, because this is using, like I said, basic geometry, basic number. And so this is why I think alchemy, Freemasonry, the Gnostics, Kabbalists, all of these people focused on this art called squaring the circle, because it allows you to see that there is an intelligence within our creation. And this intelligence is working through number, geometry, and symbol.
Okay. All right. And we got to take a quick 45-second break. We'll be right back with Marty Leeds.
The opinions expressed by the host and guests on Where Did the Road Go are their own and do not represent those of WVBR or its management. Join us on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com, where you can send us questions for our live guests via email or the live chat room. You can also check out our upcoming schedule, blog, link section, book reviews, videos, and links to our Twitter, Facebook, iTunes, and much more. That's wheredidtheroadgo.com.
And tonight, we are talking with Marty Leeds, and I wanted to get into something that might be a little more controversial here. And that's the whole biblical code, because you're treating the Bible as if it's a mythology, correct? You there, Marty? Did I not put him up? I put him up.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I had my mic on mute.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yes, I am. It is a book of mythology. That's exactly okay. What it is.
And what have you found? Like you were saying something about the name of Jesus Christ. You also have something about 666, too, don't you?
Yeah, well, the number 666 is actually encoded within Jesus's name. And this is a breakdown that you actually find on your phone, on modern-day cellular phones. So the name of Jesus, we'll go over this real quick. Jesus is J-E-S-U-S is 45666. Now, breaking up the name Jesus into syllables gives you Jesus, right?
Okay.
So 45666. Well, if you look on your phone, you have the numbers 1 through 9. And this was known as the Ennead by the Greeks and the Egyptians. And it was basically these 9 gods that kind of governed and ruled the world through the laws of number. And it's broken up into a trinity or 3 numbers each. So you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, right? Well, 1 plus 2 plus 3 equals 6. 4 plus 5 plus 6 equals 15. And then we can do some numerology on that and see 1 plus 5 equals 6. And 7 plus 8 plus 9 equals 24. And of course, 2 plus 4 equals 6. So adding the digits 1 through 9, you get 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4 plus 5 plus 6 plus 7 plus 8 plus 9 equals 45. And then breaking it up into a trinity, like I said, just as you see on your phone, you get the number 666. And this is all working with the numbers 1 through 9. Now, why this is important. Now, once again, we could say, well, it's just a force fit. You're just, you know, putting this and, you know, attributing it to Jesus. Except this is exactly how the Christian angelic hierarchy was broken up. It was 9 gods with 3 levels of 3 each. So it was like seraphim, cherubims, powers, principalities. I'm not sure what they all are, but it's literally 3 levels of 3 angels each. And so we see this breakdown of 1 through 9, and we can attribute this right to the numbers. So we see this right in the name of Jesus. So 45666 or J-E-S-U-S. And so that's just Jesus. Now Jesus equals 27. So 4 plus 5 plus 6 plus 6 plus 6 equals 27. Well, there's a bunch of words attributing directly to Jesus that also equal 27, and anybody can do this math. Lamb of God equals 27. Jesus was known as the light equals 27. Jesus was from Nazareth. Nazareth equals 27. In the Greek pantheon, he was known as the Chiro. Chiro equals 27. Gnosis equals 27. Jesus was born in the winter. Winter equals 27. So a bunch of words directly relating to Jesus share the same numerical equivalent. And then we can also see that, what is 27? We just broke up the numbers 1 through 9 into a trinity. Well, 27 is nothing more than 3 times 3 times 3, or 3 cubed. So that's just Jesus. Christ, we'll just go into this here quick. Christ is C-H-R, and this gives you the numbers 3, 6, 5. Of course, there are 365 days in the solar year. And then the next 3 letters are I-S-T, and this is 5, 6, 7. So, and this equals 32. Christ equals 32. And if you know anything about like occult numerology, things like that, of course, we have 32 and 33 degrees of Scottish Rite Freemasonry. In the Kabbalah, there's 32 wondrous ways of wisdom. This is the 10 Sephiroth, and then, of course, the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet combined to be 32. So we find this number 32 within Christ. The first three letters are CHR. This gives you 365. And then the next are 567. And 5 plus 6 plus 7 is 18. And Jesus went missing 18 years in the Bible. We hear about his story till he's, I guess we end at age 12, and then we pick back up the story at age 30. Age 12, age 30. There's 12 ages of the zodiac and 30 degrees of each age. And so we see the number 365 encoded in Jesus Christ. We see the 12 ages of the zodiac and the 30 degrees of each age, and then we also see, the 32, like I said, the 32 degrees of Scottish Rite Freemasonry, 32, 33, this very important number 32. What's even more? Jesus equals 27 and Christ equals 32. Well, 27 plus 32 is 59. And there are 59 beads in a traditional Christian rosary. So there's millions of these rosaries that people hold in their hands every day, and they do their prayer, and they kneel, and you know they're praying to this man. And there's 59 beads in this rosary. And no one knows why, as far as I know. And then we look at the numerology of his name, and it gives you this number 59. So very, very clearly showing that, you know, why there's 59 beads in a Christian rosary. And there's a bunch of other things we can go into, but I'll just say this one and we can kind of move on or whatever. But, and I have a video on this you can check out too, just the holy name of Jesus Christ. Jesus equals 27 and Christ equals 32. 27 times 32 is 864. And the diameter of the sun in English miles is 864,000 miles. So once again, that's, you know, it's not like it's a number like 900 or something. And we're going to be like, well, that's pretty close to the, no, we're talking about a very specific number dealing directly with the sun. And then we can, even when we see that, not only do we have these numbers of 18 years missing in his, you know, in his life, they're also encoded in his name. And, you know, why this, when you really get into this and you see what, how the Bible, the original Greek authorized version, or the, excuse me, the King James authorized version, this is the most important version, because this was the version that when it was written, they understood the mathematics, you know, the mathematics behind it. When you look at this and realize that there's mathematics behind the language, well, this is why it's called a gospel or a gospel, because they're telling you to look at the names, look at these characters, look at them symbolically, look at the esoteric or the occult aspect of this. And within that is, like I said, these are exact numbers, you know.
Okay, and your videos, obviously you have a lot of visual aids when you're talking about this stuff if anyone watches your videos.
Yes, it's really hard to kind of discuss some of this stuff on the air because it is numbers and people can get kind of lost in it. But yes, with the videos, what I do is I try to very, very clearly and as slow as I can anyway, kind of go over these things. And so write out all the math. I do everything so you can pause the video. You can double check the math as you're going along. You know, and I encourage people to do that because I do not want people to just believe me. I want people to sit down and do the math themselves so they can actually verify this themselves, you know. So the videos, they're basically just a lecture series, and it's just basically me and a whiteboard. That's all it is. And I just go through, and I just walk through all of these things.
And they're all found at your website.
Yeah, MartyLeeds33.com or MartyLeeds33 on YouTube, and okay. they're all there. So,
all right. Now, there's been some argument recently that 666 was really 606. Does that have any effect on what you're doing?
I haven't heard that, so I don't know. I mean, I get it. I mean, I get 666. I mean, it's mentioned a couple times in the Bible, but I mean, the most prominent verse is, of course, Revelation 13:18. Here is wisdom. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast, for it is a number of man, and his number is 666.
Apparently, there are some people who argue it was translated wrong, and it's supposed to be 606, which connects to the Roman emperor at the time.
Oh no, I haven't heard that. So. Yeah.
I don't know if it's true or not. That's just, you know, I've read a few articles on it. So, okay. Actually, what about the number 42? This has some significance, doesn't it?
Yeah, 42 is a very, very important number. There were 42 principles of the Egyptian Maat. And then this is basically where this stems from. And, of course, the Egyptians, they, looking at their pyramids, looking at everything that they've given humanity, they obviously were very adept at mathematics.
Yeah.
So, you know, without question, mathematics, geometry, engineering, architecture, anatomy. There's just no question. Symbolism, obviously. So the number 42 is the 42 principles of the Egyptian Mat. And these were the principles of law, order, and truth. And it was basically these principles that the Egyptians abided by. So why the number 42? That's the question. It's always been the question. Douglas Adams, in his book, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, says 42 is the answer to life, right? Everybody, a lot of people know that. Well, where can we find this 42? Well, all we have to do is walk up our number line. 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. 13, 14, and 15. If you look at just as it unfolds in our number line, we have pi in our number line. And that's 13, 14, and 15. All you have to do is drop the 1 and the 13. Use a little bit of your imagination. Put a decimal place after the 3, and you get 3.1415. And that's right in our unfolding number line. That's the first five digits of pi. 13 plus 14 plus 15 equals 42. And so there are 42 principles of the Egyptian Mat, and we find this right where we find pi in our number line. There's a bunch of things that I can't really go into here, but you can check out a video called, I think I go over it in a couple of videos, but one called the Garden of Eden. And then I think I go over it in the Jesus Christ video as well, I believe. But there's a bunch of things that you can do with mirroring and things like that in our number line that shows why this place in our number line is extremely important. So not only do we find the 42 principles of the Egyptian Mat, but we also find pi right there. And so this is one of the reasons I believe, I'm absolutely convinced of at this point, of why the Egyptians focused on the number 42.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about sacred geometry a little bit and some of the number numerical stuff in sacred geometry we find in nature.
This is why geometry was so heralded by so many of these cultures, especially with alchemy, Freemasonry, obviously, and then, of course, you know, Egyptians, the Hindus, there's no question there either. You know, the reason that geometry is so sacred is because it allows you to see that there is a very, I would say, elegant, simple and beautiful architecture to nature, and that you can understand it very simply through geometry. One of the easiest examples I can give, and one of the most, you know, widely known too, is the pentagram. The pentagram was the secret emblem of the Pythagoreans, of course. It's, you know, we see it on, you know, a lot of like Freemasonic literature and things like that. They talk about it. The pentagram in and of itself encodes what's known as phi, and this is this ratio 1.618. So if you draw a perfect pentagram, the short end of the line of the star will equal 1, and the long end will equal 1.618. And this 1.618 is found in the Fibonacci sequence. So the Fibonacci sequence is this sequence that we see all throughout nature. It's how rediscovered by Leonardo of Pisa, Leonardo Fibonacci. I think this was in like the 1300s or something like that. But we can obviously see that the Greeks knew it because phi is encoded in the Parthenon. We can obviously see that the Egyptians knew it because phi is encoded in the Great Pyramid of Giza, as well as the Temple of Luxor, and as well as, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Why this is important is we see that ratio of five in the pentagram, and we see it in this is something that we see all throughout nature. Your human body is built off phi. You know, sunflowers, eddies and rivers, tornadoes, all of these things follow this Fibonacci swirl, this sequence of phi. And we find this ratio exactly in the number five, in the pentagram. And so we can see that it's almost like how I've come to understand it is this is how the Creator speaks to us, that there is an intelligent force behind nature, and it speaks to us through geometry, number, and symbol. And so this is why sacred geometry is so important.
Okay. Now, when you say creator, we could be looking at something like a holographic universe or a computer simulation that we're existing within as well, which would fit with that quite well.
Ultimately, I think that's what we're living in, is a simulation, a hologram, an illusion. You know, the word Maya, of course, the Mayan people, and then the Hindu word or the Sanskrit word Maya, both of these terms mean illusion. Mm-hmm. And it's so, you know, the Mayan people understood that this was some sort of like hologram or illusion. Now, and I think that geometry helps us understand that in one respect. That's all fine and good, but there's actually physicists. In fact, it was just one on, I think it was maybe like 3 weeks ago or something, on Huffington Post, that were basically saying this. They're basically saying, hey man, this whole thing could end up being an illusion. You know, and I think it really is. And I think that this is some of what some of these ancient people understood. let me give you an example of the esoteric symbolism of something like the Holy Bible and this idea of an illusion. In the opening pages of the whole in Genesis, you have this idea where there was a firmament that separated the waters above and the waters below, right? I think it's Genesis 1:3 or 1:8 or something like that. Well, this idea, what happens when you look into water? It's a reflection, right? So, I mean, that's what you get. Your left eye becomes your right eye, your right, your left, etc. Mm-hmm. So what happens when you put water against water? Well, what happens when you put a mirror against another mirror? Right. It's an infinite set of reflections. It just reflects and reflects, right? So it's infinity, but it's not really infinite. It's only the appearance of infinity. And I think that they encoded this stuff within the Bible. And by the way, firmament, when you look at the word firmament, this means a vault of sky, right? But when you break up the word firmament, ment comes from the Latin word mentis, which means mind. And firm means securely fixed in place. So we have these waters above and the waters below reflecting on each other, giving us the appearance of infinity. And where is this appearance of infinity kept? In the firm mind of the human being. That's the esoteric, you know, the side of what they're saying there. And so even in the opening pages of the Holy Bible, I think that they're saying that this is essentially an illusion.
Okay. Now, if you take the number correlations you're using right now with the modern Bible and you compare it to the Hebrew version, do the numbers add up or are they completely different?
Well, let me get, because I haven't done enough study with Hebrew. And okay. The reason I haven't is because, I mean, I covered a little bit in the last book and I'm going to do a little bit more in the next book. The reason I haven't is because I don't speak it. And that is my biggest problem. And I honestly just do not have time to learn a language. But I will say this. The opening line of Genesis, in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth, right? Well, this is what's known as a primer. A primer is, well, just like when you paint your house, you need a primer. You need to lay the primer down in order for the paint to stick. A primer is basically like an elementary text to help you understand the rest of the text. So in order for you to read the Holy Bible, you have to understand this first verse, all the implications, all the math, all the symbolism, et cetera, that's behind this first verse before you can even go on to read the rest of the text. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. This is 10 words, right? In the Hebrew cipher, or in the Hebrew Bible, it's 28 letters. So in English, we have 10 words. In Hebrew, we have 28 letters. Well, why this is important is if you look down at your hands, you have 10 fingers, right? And then you have these little segments on your fingers called phalanges or phalanges. And this is, you have 28 of these. So you have two on your thumb, three on each finger, 14 on one hand, 14 on the other. You bring your two hands together in the act of prayer, if you will. And this gives you two numbers, 10 and 28. Well, this is exactly the first verse of the whole of Genesis in both Hebrew and English. So it shows you that there's definitely a cross correlation within the numbers. And this is the other thing I need to say about this too, is that we know that the Bible was written in Greek, Hebrew, of course, and then now English. And if they were translating this stuff from the Greek, from the original Greek, from the original Hebrew Septuagint, if they were translating this stuff into English, it would have to be, that information would have to be in those texts, if you know what I'm saying.
Right.
Like if the diameter of the sun is encoded within Jesus Christ, well, if we go to a Greek representation of what Jesus Christ would be, then of course we would have to find that in Greek as well. If you get what I'm saying.
Right. But you haven't actually checked to make sure of that.
No, just because I don't speak it. You know, I have done some gematria work with Greek and Hebrew, but it's really, really difficult for me to do that just because I don't speak the language.
Okay. All right. Fair. That's fair. What about free will? What are your opinions on this?
We have it.
Okay. All right.
I think this is the cornerstone of what it is to be a human being. That we were, you know, what this human experience is, the human condition is always given choices. Every moment of every second of every day, we have the choice to do whatever we want with that. And we are given this polarity, this positive and negative, good and evil, if you will. And this polarity is basically given us the gradation of experience to be able to choose what we want to bring out in this world. And of course, the true spiritual work, the true alchemical work, the true, you know, hero's journey or whatever, is to bring out the good, you know. And so I think the free will is very important because we're given the choice. to choose. And I think the thing that we, as a humanity, what we need to do now anyway is bring out the good, you know. So Will in this cipher, by the way, W-I-L-L is 4522, and this equals 13. We separated our alphabet into 13 letters each, A through M, N through Z. God in this cipher, G-O-D, is 724. This equals 13. Lord in this cipher is L-O-R-D, is 2254. This equals 13. Sun in this cipher, S-U-N, is 661. This equals 13. Yes in this cipher, Y-E-S, is 256. This equals 13 as well. So the true free will is to bring out the God, the Lord, the Son, the light within, if you will.
All right. What about synchronicity when it comes to all this type of stuff?
I tell you what, man, you know, ever since working with geometry and number intensely, I would say, so I would go, you know, maybe say 3-4 years or something like that, synchronicity start happen all the time. It's a daily occurrence now, often hourly, where something just absolutely magical will happen, you know, whether it's just like you notice a number or you're, you know, I don't know how many times I've been thinking about a number. I open up a book and that's the first thing I see. You know, or I'm working on a number and it's, you know, I get the number 123 and I look up in the clock and it's 123, you know, that sort of stuff. It happens all the time now. So, and I think that's one of the reasons that when these ancient people started working with mathematics, this stuff started bounding out around them and it was undeniable, you know?
Interesting. Okay. You want to get into a little more about the Zodiac?
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, where do you want to go with it? Because there's a bunch of different things we could kind of talk about.
Well, whatever you want to go with. Go ahead.
Okay. One of the things I covered in the Pi in English Alphabet Volume 1 is a direct correlation that you can make with the Zodiac and Pi. So Zodiac in the cipher, Z-O-D-I-A-C, is 124513. Well, this equals 16. Why this is important is because the zodiac, the belt of the zodiac, the constellations reside 8 degrees above and 8 degrees below this belt, and it's a 16-degree belt. That's what the zodiac is. And so we have this degree right in zodiac. Okay, so then I was like, okay, well, then I'm just going to go and I'm going to assign all the numbers to the 12 constellations of the zodiac, the traditional hermetic breakdown of the zodiac, the 12 constellations. You know, Taurus, Gemini, Cancer, etc. So, you know, like Aquarius, for instance, equals 34. But, you know, Pisces equals 28. Aries equals 22, etc. So I added up all 12 ages of the zodiac, and it equals 315. It's like, oh, well, who cares? It's just an arbitrary number. Mm-hmm. But then I went and I took the 16 digits of pi. So it was 3.14159265353. 89, I'm getting that wrong. Excuse me. But the first 16 digits of pi.
All right.
And then I put the numbers to the letters. So 3 is 28. Point is 18. 1 is 8. 4 is 19. 1 is 8. 5 is 21, etc. And I added up 16 digits of pi, and it equals 315. And so you have the 12 ages of the zodiac equaling 315. You have zodiac equaling 16, and there's a 16-degree belt of the zodiac. You go to 16 digits of pi, and it equals 315. And you say, well, how is that even possible? Yet it is. It's something that, you know, in the way that we view the world in this very reductionist, mechanistic approach, we don't think of the world magically or mystically at all. Most people don't. With that mentality, that shouldn't be. That shouldn't come out that way. Yet it does. And anybody that puts the numbers to the letters will get that exact. I mean, that's verifiable. You can verify yourself. And so you say, and then we could go into the number 315, why 315 is important, all the ways that we can attribute this to the Great Pyramid of Giza once again, etc. But it really shows that the people that created the 12 ages of the zodiac, they weren't just a bunch of, you know, sheep herders at night, you know, thinking that there's a crab in the sky. No, that they were, you know, that they were giving these houses of the zodiac, this particular, you know, house in the sky, age in the sky, very particular symbols, very particular names, because they were encoding mathematics behind it.
All right, that's interesting. Now, what about alchemy? Now, alchemy, you know, I mean, people have so many different takes on what alchemy really was about. How does this relate to what you're doing?
Well, alchemy is about finding the God within. That's what it's about, ultimately. You know, when you get down to the brass tacks, is the nitty-gritty of it. alchemy, literally, al means, it's the phonetic sound of all or al, when this is a reference to God, of course, the all or the entirety of Allah. So, and then, of course, chemi, which is chemistry. So literally, the word alchemy means God chemistry. That's when you break it down, and it's the most simple form. And, you know, the idea is that in alchemy is, of course, we have the allegory or whatever, or turning lead into gold. Of course, this transubstantiation of the soul is really what it's talking about. And it's really, it's understanding that the power and source of the great creator, the great spirit, the great mystery, the grand architect, the great geometer, whatever it is you want to say, is within the human being. And the goal of the human being is to find that, let it out, let it bloom, let it come to fruition. And that is basically what we're here to do. And so alchemy was, was this divinatory process, or if you will, that understood this and canonized this in books and their illustrations and the verbiage surrounding it, all of that. And so at the core, I think that's what alchemy is. And I'm very much into alchemy. So.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess the last thing I wanted to ask you about, you had a vision about an electric serpent, didn't you?
Yes. This was several years back. I don't even know how long ago. But I had taken some psychedelic mushrooms one night, which is not something I do that often, honestly. Maybe once a year or something like that. But one night I was just sitting out with some friends, and I was just kind of sitting alone. We were all very quiet. And basically, I was really just kind of enamored with the stars. The stars that night were just out. I mean, you could just clearly see the Milky Way galaxy. We were kind of out in this, away from the city, so there was not a lot of light pollution. And basically, there's this idea of that the Milky Way, if you will, from our perspective, is almost like the Ouroboros. It's the snake eating. It's the snake eating its tail. Well, I kind of had this, and so I ended up like closing my eyes, and in my head, I had this vision of this electric serpent, and I can see it as clear as I could that night. I mean, this thing is just imprinted in my brain now. And so one day I was going through the internet or something like that, and I saw this cross section of DNA, and it was like, I don't know if I have it in the book or not, but and you look at it, and if you look at it creatively, It looks like the head of a serpent. It looks like this almost like Quetzalcoatl kind of figure, this kind of like winged serpent. And I remember seeing that, and instantly I was like, that's what I saw. That's exactly what I saw. And I mean, I see it today, and it's the exact same image in my head. And so it was like, okay, so if I was, focused on the stars that night, and yet I had this vision in my head of this serpent, and then I see later that this serpent is, this cross-section of DNA, ultimately, it was almost like this verification or validation of the concept of as above, so below, and that the human being, if you will, is that central node or balancing point between that which is above and that which is below. The DNA below our in our system and the stars above are just reflections of one another, if you will.
Okay. Well, I mean, Francis Crick supposedly came up with the structure of DNA while he was on LSD, I think it was.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. Yeah, I haven't read that book or not, but yeah, that's apparently he said that on his deathbed too. So I'm not sure the validity of that, but yeah, that's what I've heard. So,
So I mean, that's it's almost like it's interconnecting us to something maybe more sacred, as many people would say.
Well, yeah, I mean, then you have a lot of times you'll have in Freemasonic literature and things like that, the idea of the rungs of the ladder to heaven, I mean, of course you look at DNA and what is it? Well, you can easily construe that symbolically as a ladder, no question.
How many years have you been working on this?
Basically my entire life, really, I mean, I've been studying. I mean, I've been an avid reader since I was like 17, 18 years old or something like that, and I guess I got into spiritual concepts kind of later in my life. Seeking, questions, seeking answers to a lot of these big questions. But I got into sacred geometry in that for probably the last like 5 years or something like that. So just reading a bunch of guys like R.H. Walter Lubitsch and, John Michel, of course, heavily influenced by John Michel, things like that. So theology of arithmetic, arithmomancy, that sort of thing. Just looking at all of these especially once again with the resurgence of archaeoastronomy, really showing that these ancient people heralded geometry and were much more intelligent than we give them credit for. So,
and I believe on your site it says you're a mathematician or a math magician. I'm sorry.
Yeah. It's just kind of a joke. So,
was math like a favorite subject of yours early on, or did this kick in later?
No, I was terrible at math. That's why I find it so funny. I if I remember correctly, I think I got a C in college algebra.
Mm.
So I'm not really adept at math at all. In fact, when I first got into this, I ended up basically doing like multiplication tables again. Like I have a journal and I look back, it was probably a couple months ago or whatever. I look back and I was like, I saw myself and I'm sitting here literally one times one is one, one times two is two, and I literally was writing out my multiplication tables again because I really wanted to learn math from the ground floor. I wanted to relearn it all again and just go in with my own, this kind of unshackled, unfettered approach to mathematics and just learn it all myself, learn the symbolism, learn, how the numbers interact with each other and that sort of thing.
Hmm. All right. And you have, as we said a few times, you have a ton of videos up on your website, which is what again?
MartyLeads33.com. And then, YouTube, MartyLeads33. And then you can, like me on Facebook as well. I post quotes and internet memes all the time and new videos and, just keep up to date on books and things.
Yeah. And how many books do you have out?
Three now.
Okay.
So I've written four, but one is out of print now. Like I said, I'm working on another one now, hopefully out by the end of the year and probably next. So.
And the one you're working on is the third part of the Pi series there?
Yeah. And then I also have I'm also a singer-songwriter. I've got some videos that I post, songs I've written. Then I have a record, Opus Medico Musica, that you can get on iTunes or Amazon.com or my site as well.
So and does this connect into the sacred geometry part of your world?
No, I just like rocking, man. You know?
Okay. Well, we're going to hear something off of it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So. Go on. What were you going to say?
Oh, no. Just, studying this stuff, philosophy, spirituality and stuff like that has heavily influenced my music. That's for sure.
Okay. All right. What's this track we're going to hear?
I'm not sure what I sent you.
Opus Medico Musica.
Opus Medico Musica. I think, baby, I sent you Passion and Desire.
Oh, yes, you did. I'm sorry.
Is that what it is? Okay,
reading that backwards. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's right.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Anything you want to say about this before we hear it?
No. Just, it was one of my favorite tunes that I've ever written, so.
Okay, and this whole CD is available on your site?
Yep, and like I said, iTunes and Amazon.com, too. You can download the MP3 for like $9 or something, so.
All right, MartyLeads33.com, and I thank you so much for joining us tonight. It was a fascinating conversation.
Hey, thanks a lot. I really appreciate it.
And the name of this project is what?
The record?
Yeah.
Oh, Opus Medico Musica.
All right.
Which is basically Latin for a work of medical music.
Nice. All right, we'll be back next week with Peter Robbins in studio. The Last Exit for the Lost is up next for those of you listening live. Thanks, Marty.
Thanks.
Forsake me, lying here in our bed. The crying that we do when we come unglued ain't a deluge we've seen just yet. If it weren't for the woven miss of a good man, I might have lost it all some time ago. But lucky for the hero, Slade and the Draco, a princess now a passion and desire. Will they burn you like a fire and tie you till your soul when you can't take no more? And they may just steal your heart. Moments aligned with curtains, sparkling silver and gold. And I've been witness to so much resistance, I can't make sense of it all. And fall as we do, our inherent truth is to rise up and walk on our own. Shown as it is, we'll always convince the keeper to let himself go. A passion and desire, well, they'll burn you like a fire and tie you till your soul when you can't take no more. And they may just steal your heart. Steal your heart.